It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 11. Thanks for all the messages, and thanks to those of you who've expressed your appreciation at us being back. And thanks to my new colleague, Peter, who's producing this.
Excuse me, David, it is Pete, the producer here. We're recording this on the very day that the Ashers Bakery case has ended at the Supreme Court, so I'm just going to butt in and hear the wonderful words of Daniel MacArthur of Ashers Bakery.
Well, I want to start by thanking God. He has been with us during the challenges of the last 4 years, and through the Bible and the support of Christians, he has comforted us and sustained us. He is our rock, and all his ways are just. We're delighted.
Daniel MacArthur, Ashers Bakery. We'll do much more on this next week. Back to David.
Well, I really do want to begin with a good news story, and a good news story that involves the BBC, and even more astonishingly, a good news story that involves the BBC and Christianity.
We're aiming for the most marginalised, the most abandoned, because we don't just do debt counselling. When you meet people who are really, really broken and they've got other issues, we are really open to offer to pray with people.
The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, release from darkness for the prisoners, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour and the day of vengeance of our God, and to comfort all who mourn.
They produced a documentary about Christians Against Poverty. It was an hour-long documentary, and as far as I know, Christians Against Poverty did not have the input into this or the control of it. So you wonder what it was going to be like. If it had been the National Secular Society, then they would have gone on about how Christians manipulate the poor in order to get them to come to faith. But this was a very balanced documentary. In fact, it was a beautiful documentary in so many ways. I'm so thankful for the work of Christians Against Poverty, and I would encourage you to support them and to encourage them. But kudos to the BBC for doing this. It really was quite remarkable and so encouraging. There's also another good news story. Well, kind of a good news story. It's a good news story in that it exposes something that's in our culture that we kind of mentioned last week in terms of the indoctrination that's going on at our universities. Now listen to this.
Dear Dr. Helen Wilson, I have now closely considered the revisions of your manuscript, Dog Park, and will recommend its publication in Gender, Place, and Culture. You have done very good work to address the issues the reviewers raised and have clarified your arguments. Thank you for your contribution to Gender, Place, and Culture, and I hope to be seeing your manuscript in print. Yours truly, PhD Managing Editor, Gender, Place, and Culture. We have an accepted paper in the number one feminist geography journal.
Since approximately June of 2017, I, along with two other concerned academics, Peter Boghossian and Helen Pluckrose, have been writing intentionally broken academic papers and submitting them to highly respected journals in fields that study gender, race, sexuality, and similar topics. We did this to expose a political corruption that's taken hold of the university. By this point, several of these papers have been accepted in highly respected...
Three academics decided to run a year-long project in which they would put in basically nonsensical papers, but couched in postmodernist language, to respected academic journals to see if they would be accepted. They determined, and you really should watch the video, the 6-minute video that we've put a link to, because it's hilarious, but also quite sad. But it is hilarious. And they decided that they would be honest, that they would record the results of their experiment, and if nobody accepted them, they would say that they'd got it wrong. but to date they've had at least 7 papers accepted. Now, just to give you some idea of how insane this is, one paper was entitled Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performity at Urban Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon, which argued that dog parks are rape-condoning spaces. Another one, entitled Our Struggle is My Struggle, Solidarity Feminism as an Intersectional Reply to Neoliberal and Choice Feminism, actually contained a reworking of parts of Hitler's Mein Kampf, and it was accepted. I'm sorry, this is so mad. Here's an extract from the dog parks paper. How's this for gobbledygook? Dog parks are microcosms where hegemonic masculinist norms governing queering behavior and compulsory heterosexuality can be observed in a cross-species environment. Now, you need to understand that this paper was accepted by an academic journal, and it was in fact praised as first-class research. It was just utter nonsense. There's so much that this teaches about our culture, and there's so much warning of this in the church, for us in the church as well. Have a look at the article on Premier Christianity, which I wrote for them. I must admit, I had so much fun writing it and just reading about this, but just bizarre, the foolishness at times of this world. Now, last week we mentioned the hate poster, and that whole story has continued. In fact, I'd value your prayers for that, because I understand as I'm recording this that there's an interview to go out with me for STV and probably the BBC. I've also just written an article for the Daily Mail, and the link for that will probably be up by the time this goes out. It's been an incredibly hectic time. And what's amazing is how many people are open to what is being said. The Scottish Government and others have been trying to defend themselves, but most people realise that it is religious people, and especially Christians, who are being blamed for bigotry. And the good news is that many of you, in fact, I understand hundreds of people, have complained to the police that the police themselves have committed a hate incident. Well, one other example of that is the former MP John Nicholson, a senior SNP politician, appearing on the Andrew Marr show, talking, amongst other things, about the Pride Parade in Stornoway. Listen to what he had to say.
Now, Stornoway is not a place where men wear suspenders. It's, in fact, the Outer Hebrides is where one branch of my family come from. And I was reflecting when I was...
Staunchly free Presbyterian territory.
Some refer to them as the Tartan Taliban. It is a place of dour Presbyterianism, very good values, strongly Christian place, but also tinged with intolerance historically. So the idea that you have a gay pride march...
The Tartan Taliban, eh? My good old brothers and sisters in the Free Church and the Church of Scotland and the Free Presbyterians and the continuing, the different denominations up there, they're the Tartan Taliban. I don't think you would get a senior politician talking about the Catholic Mafia in Glasgow. And nor should they. But it's okay, apparently, to talk about the Tartan Taliban up in Lewis. Let's all have a laugh. Because the Taliban murder people. The Taliban torture people. The Taliban bomb people. There are no Calvinists in Lewis doing even remotely that. In fact, as my article in the Mail suggests, there are greater similarities between the Taliban and the SNP, because the Taliban are a nationalist organization seeking to get their independence. And there are other similarities as well. They seem to be fundamentally intolerant. And that's one of the things that worries me about all of this. Because we are being told that it doesn't matter where we're from, it's where we're going. Now, in a sense, in a Christian sense, you can appreciate that and understand that. It matters if we're going to heaven or to hell. We would say that. But that's not what the SNP mean when they use it as a mantra at their convention, which has just finished. What they mean is you have to sign up to all their values. They don't care where you're from. And actually, it does matter where you're from. It matters what your ancestry is. It matters where you were born. Many of these things do matter. I don't think they should be determinative of everything, but they are a factor in our lives. But where you're going, it matters where you're going. And here's the thing. If we don't buy into the new progressive values that we are constantly told are the future of our country, then what are we? We are strangers and exiles. Well, I guess as Christians, we should be used to that. Meanwhile, the indoctrination of our children continues. The BBC carried a video of a school in Manchester where six-year-olds were told that they must write a letter from a prince to his manservant to say that they were in love and wanted to get married.
You're Prince Henry. You're going to tell Thomas why it's a brilliant idea for him to marry you. They're going to go out into that world and find this diversity around them, and they'll find that at a young age as well. And the more they can be accepting at this age, you're not going to face it further on, because the children will be accepting now and will be accepting this diversity around them.
Six-year-olds. Indoctrinating children. It's unbelievable. I mean, the teacher said something about, well, if they learn this now, then they'll accept diversity later on. No, this is indoctrination into accepting one particular lifestyle. Why that one? Why shouldn't it be the case for other lifestyles as well? But I mean, even in a kind of heterosexual relationship, I don't want six-year-olds writing love letters. Why are we sexualizing our children so early? And the trans madness, of course, continues. At the SNP conference, speakers said if you did not recognize that a trans woman was a woman, there was something wrong with you. They are a woman, and that's it. No, they're not. And yet, we have an example of Brighton City Council, who are now telling their school teachers that if a child comes to school and wants to wear a skirt, a boy wants to wear a skirt and says he's a girl, that parents don't need to be told. And indeed, if the parents were to object, then they should be reported to social services and indeed even to the police. Now, that's, again, the level of madness on which we're at. We discover earlier this year that there was a teacher who was reported to the police and told by them that she'd committed a hate crime for misgendering a child. What can I say? What can anyone say except Lord deliver us from this insanity? But the church is not helping in many instances. I listened to a bishop on the radio this week saying that we were more enlightened than Moses and we knew better than the Bible. And I listened to, sadly, one of my colleagues, well, not in my denomination, in the Church of Scotland, but nonetheless a Presbyterian minister, Reverend Peter Nimmo from Inverness, saying this at the Gay Pride Parade in Inverness.
But sadly, religious people are sometimes among the ones who are least understanding. For Christians in my tradition, we have misread the Bible, we have used outmoded theology and attitudes to hurt, discriminate and exclude. We have often acted judgmentally and unlovingly towards our LGBT neighbours and friends. For this, we can only repent before God, apologise to those whom we have hurt, and try to learn to do better.
What's wrong with what he said? You could say there's so much that's right. But you know what he's doing? He's apologising and repenting, not on behalf of himself, of course, but on behalf of people like me, and I hope you, if you're a Christian, who actually believe the Bible. He says we've misread the Bible. He says we've got outmoded theology, and he calls us to repent before God. Well, I'm not sure which God he's talking about. I have much to repent of before God. But I can tell you one thing I don't have to repent of, and that is upholding what God says about marriage. It was God who made us male and female, and it was God who provided the context in which sex should take place. And so I'm going to continue to uphold the teaching of Jesus about marriage, and I'm not going to apologize or repent of that. Yes, we need to learn to do many things better, but just going along with the culture, seeking the applause of the mob, and joining in with the current zeitgeist. I'm sorry, Mr. Nimmo, but your church is going to die, and it deserves to die, because you are preaching a gospel which is not good news at all. You are preaching something which is the antithesis of what Jesus brought to us. What's the point of being a minister if you're just going to tell the society what the society wants to hear? I just don't understand that. Meanwhile, another minister got into trouble. This is someone who I would regard as a good and faithful brother, and that is Tim Keller. I happened to be on a program called Cross Politic, and we had a good and, I think, forthright discussion with three gentlemen from Moscow, Idaho, and Doug Wilson's church, college, whatever there, called Cross Politic. It was good fun to be with them. However, after I left, they then got on to discussing Tim Keller's latest article in the New York Times, and they were pretty critical of it. Now, why were they critical? Because Tim basically says in a two-party system in the United States, where the Republicans and Democrats, Christians don't really belong to either. And they thought that this was him going soft on socialism and soft on the Democrats. Well, I'm sorry, but if I'd been there, they asked me later on in their own discussion, but if I'd been part of that discussion, I would have said that Tim was exactly right. We do not take a party political position, and whilst it is true that left-wingers at the moment tend to adopt a more, inverted commas, progressive attitude towards abortion and same-sex marriage, in reality, right-wingers aren't that much different. And those aren't the only issues. So if you read Keller's article, you'll see that what he was saying, that Christians do not take a party political position and that Christians can have different political views, was absolutely spot on. And I'm sorry, but if you're saying socialism is theft, and if you are a Christian who's a socialist, then you're a thief and you're breaking the law of God, so how can you be a Christian? That's as daft as someone saying capitalism is murder, murder is against the law of God. If you're a Christian and a capitalist, then you're sinning, and how can you even call yourself a Christian? Both of those positions are utterly ludicrous. Read Keller's article and you will see a very, very balanced perspective on this. I don't know if you've heard of the artist Banksy, but he's always performing stunts, a graffiti artist and so on. And he performed one that I think showed the bankruptcy of the modern art world, where one of his paintings sold for £850,000. And as it was announced at Sotheby's, he'd inbuilt a shredder into the painting, and the painting began to shred.
And selling for £860,000.
Now, I think it only got about halfway down before they stopped it shredding completely. But there's just so many images in that. The video of this has, of course, gone viral. And again, we put a link to it. But there's so many things that we could say in this. Yeah, you know, everything we buy, one day, it's really going to be shredded, isn't it? It's going to turn to dust. We may pay millions for something. We may pay thousands for something. It doesn't matter. It's all going to return to dust. So I think there's a great image in there. But another sad thing is, of course, that that painting, that shredded painting, now, because of the publicity in this vain and daft world, that painting is going to probably double in value, even as a shredded painting. That's the way the world works. It's got nothing to do with art. It's got nothing to do with talent. It's got everything to do with money and speculation. And finally, let's go back to a quote of the week. We didn't do that last week, so we'll do it this week. And it comes from Chrysostom, who's talking about when Christians are persecuted or defamed. And given a lot of what we've been talking about in this week's podcast, I guess it's relevant. He says this, "While the life which we present before them is brighter than the sun, yet if anyone will speak evil of us, let us not grieve at being defamed, but only if we be defamed with justice." In other words, if you're going to be insulted and accused because of Christ, rejoice. If you're insulted and accused because you've done something wrong or obnoxious, then repent. Well, God bless you, and hopefully we shall see you next week. And yes, I know I said about the crowdfunder before, but we are getting it set up. We're just not quite there yet, and I'll have news of it next week. Bye.
Part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than barking.